Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Rugby Review Show here on New Zealand Sports Radio. Yes, we will be reviewing Bledisloe Cup 2, the Mitre 10 Cup Round 6, I think it is, and the Farrah Palmer Cup Round 7, which is the final round of the regular competition for them before they hit the finals next weekend. So we'll tell you how those finals have come up as well. But yes, you're all here to talk or listen about the Bledisloe Cup 2. Let's be honest. How will the Wallabies go against the All Blacks after drawing last weekend? How can they do at Fortress Eden Park? Or is it called ASB Park now or some sausage sizzle place park? I don't know. They keep it's all been sold. And yes, our the rights and our lives have been sold to advertisers. There we go, folks. It's just not the same, is it, if you can't call it by its original name? Because Arsrin, great to have you on the show. You're a fan of the kind of the old lady that is Eden Park.
Oh, absolutely. So, I mean, I'd struggle with a name change, but it was only temporary. I can live with that. It was a marketing gimmick.
No, it's permanent. It's permanently ASB, isn't it? It's going to be, but it's temporarily Sausage Sizzle Park, I think.
No. It was just a one-off game. That was Cooper's Catch. So ASB were doing a marketing thing to help boost a business, or they're doing a marketing thing to help boost small businesses in this COVID era that we live in and COVID environment. And so they basically had Cooper's Catch Stadium Park. Sorry, Cooper's Catch Park. I thought it would have sounded, Cooper's Catch Stadium would have sounded better. But that's it. This is a one-off game.
One-off game. Oh, okay then. Yep. And also joining us is Stephen, who during this COVID era has been travelling around the country, which he must be happy to have done when he head down to that Ranfurly Shield game on Friday night, and was back up, though, in Auckland for the All Blacks test. Look at me, the jet set playboy of the group. How are you doing, sir?
You got the playboy bit right back. I'll give you that. Good evening, Paul and Ashwin. Great to be on the show.
So where should we start? Let's start off with that inconsequential Farrah Palmer Cup game. Wellington versus Otago, or would you guys rather start off with the Bledisloe Cup, New Zealand versus Australia, do you think?
You probably might as well start off with the Bledisloe because we saw it.
there's me just stirring and trying to wind up after in a bit on that one from some pre-show comments or in our chat group.
I don't know. We should maybe we should run a poll and see what our audience wants us to talk about. What's the season for polling?
You think this is a democracy? No, this is a dictatorship. This show and this radio station. Go away. We don't have three yearly elections.
We are the North Korea. We are the North Korea of radio broadcasting.
There you go. So Bledisloe Cup and Stephen, you were a bit concerned early on. You thought the Aussies came out and the Wallabies came out and had a good first sort of. I don't know, first 10-15 minutes.
Well, there was a lot of structure in their play, and they were attacking areas. And more importantly, though, actually, I thought they were getting across the game line quite easy, and it really just took a couple of really good turnovers just to sort of stop that momentum. And the All Blacks for a while there, I thought they were sort of using the high kick game to clear from the 22, giving the ball back to Australia. So yeah, those early stanzas were definitely concerning. And listen, it was I thought they started really, really well. Just probably for their sake, they just didn't put any points on. They needed to start really, really early, quickly.
Yeah, I mean, my tweet at halftime was an awful lot of rugby, not many points. And yeah, I don't think the score gave any indication as to how much play there was in that first half. Both sides keeping the ball in. We had a lot of game in play. It was a lot of rugby and a lot of probably a lot of tired bodies already at halftime.
Yeah, look, I mean, like, obviously just before we came on air and in the green room, because we're Flash and we have a green room, Steve and I were talking, and this is like, just in terms of, I think where the Wallabies probably lost at early doors was the fact is that they were dominant in that first 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and they didn't score the points. And what they needed is that points leads to confidence within the team. And this is like, hey, we've been down here and we've got nothing out of it. And then, you know, roles get reversed, and, you know, jumping ahead a little bit here, but, you know, All Blacks go and put the first points on the board. Really, with all that dominance that the Wallabies had, wouldn't have helped with their confidence.
No, and early on, we'll get on to why not? Sidetrack. Aaron goes, Dane Cole stamped his mark on the Aussies. I didn't see that watching the game. But was there some boot action from Dane Cole?
He's just referring to that early exchange. I think that went on. If we go back to a week ago, I think one of the things that the All Blacks was definitely missing was a bit of aggressive attitude, or there was a bit of fire missing out of the All Blacks last week. And maybe that was another reason why Dane Cole's actually started this week, especially with Whitelock out as well. And I think it was the fact is that, hey, this week we're not taking a backward step. You know, you can go and hit our boys late, but we're still going to step up and come at you.
Just sending an early message to Taniela Tupou. I think there was one pass that hit him on the chest and he lost it. But Dane Cole's decided he should still go through with the tackle. And it was really just to make a statement. Hey, mate, whenever you're going to be there, we're going to be right in your face all day. But he does, you know, it's typical Dane Coles. He does push the envelope a little bit, shall we say. But he's just, like I say, sending a message. We're up for this today, lads.
Sending the message that it's, hey, you're not in the 1A competition anymore, Taniela.
Oh, dearie me. But there was a certain scrum cap, a red one, that seemed to be following Beauden Barrett around early on. And every time he kicked, seemed to just get him after the kick. And Wilson, yeah, was definitely letting Beauden Barrett know that he was that it was going to be two ways. It wasn't just going to be one way traffic in the intensity in this game. I mean, both teams were up for it.
Yeah, in those early stanzas, Wilson definitely showed out whether he was carrying. Remembering he started at number eight this year with Hannigan coming into the side of the scrum, and he was making a few little statements with his tackling. They were all sort of a little borderline, but there was nothing that I saw that was illegal. Just letting Beauden, a little bit like Coles, letting Tupou know you're there. Hannigan, beg your pardon, Wilson, letting Barrett, no, I'm right in your face as well.
Well, I think, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Australia just bought what they kept, what they had in Wellington, and the only difference was is the fact is that the All Blacks decided, hang on, we didn't, we let them get away with it last week. This week we got to bring it ourselves as well, and I thought that they were fighting fire with fire. Again, I don't think there was anything untoward with that. It's just good hard physical rugby.
Yeah, as you say, yeah. When you because sometimes when you say fire with fire, you're suggesting illegal stuff. No. That was as you say, both sides were the correct side of the law. But as you say, proper physicality.
Apart from one thing, because I didn't see this during the game. Obviously, I mean, when you're at the ground, but Well, let's face it, the star of the day, Caleb Clark, in the interview on TV afterwards, is like, yeah, Hooper grabbed my nuts. what we saw was
just for our audience, they were sharing peanuts at the end of the game.
Peanuts, so. Yeah.
Oh dear me. But early on, I mean, you talked about Chanelo Tupou, but he even got in on the kicking action as well. I mean, a clearance kick from his own 22. That was a bit of a we've had Hoskins Tutu do a bit of kicking earlier in the Super Rugby season, but he's a number eight. I mean, we've seen Zinzan Brook do that in the past. But Chanelo Tupou, a prop. I mean, this really, I mean, where is, what has happened to my game when we have props kicking the ball? I'm disgusted.
Well, he did make that early statement. Not only was he making that early statement with the kick, but I actually thought he was making an early statement at scrum time. If we think back to the first two or three scrums, it'd be fair to say the All Blacks needed to make some adjustments or some required adjustments, because I thought the first three scrums, I thought that All Black eight were going to be in for a very, very long day. Remembering you've changed your front row. You've taken Cody Taylor out, who's a renowned scrummager, Sam Whitelock, who scrums well, and I thought, boy, here we go. But it didn't last for long.
But and then we lost Moody as well to what looked like quite a nasty. I mean, he went off on the stretcher. Shaking head there, Austin.
Look at the tackle technique. Jeez, what a shocker!
Yeah,
I mean, I'll lead with my head. That was, so. I mean, it happens, right? It happens in a game, but geez, that was a really poor technique on that tackle, and it led to what you expect to lead from that poor technique in that situation.
Well, he should have done one of my tricks and just said to Sam Kane, yours.
Yeah. It's just like we were saying in the stands, oh, ref obstruction, Joe Moody stopped Sam Kane tackling him.
which meant we saw a debutant on very early or relatively early in Hodgman. A player that I've thought was, well, hadn't looked big enough at sometimes as a Blues prop, was more a mobile prop than perhaps a big guy. But yeah, look, he had a good game today, didn't he?
Well, you go, Steve.
Yeah. I mean to say, when he basically came on, I post on another website, and I posted, I'm very, very concerned about Alex Hodgman's scrummaging at this level. And within 20 seconds, I messaged myself again. Who was that idiot that made that comment? Definitely. A guy who sounded like me made that comment. Yeah. Or
somebody took over your Twitter account.
Stole my identity, I'll tell you. But yeah. Listen, from his first scrum, he set the tone. Talk about taking your opportunities. And also adds a lot of mobility around the paddock, and was, I think he made 8 or 9 tackles and was 100%.
I just wanted to come back to, because I mean, obviously we do end up focusing on the All Black side of things quite a bit, but just that kick that Tupou made in the game under pressure, it was just like, everybody around us like, whoa, it was like that. He has got the skill sets of a back. He might be a prop, but he has actually got, I mean, like when you look at his passing ability in just in general play, et cetera, as well, we know about his pace when he gets those opportunities to use it. But he's actually got the skill sets of a back. He is a phenomenal player. So sorry to digress back to Tupou, but yeah.
He is what you would call a modern forward, isn't he? Who is happy linking with the backs in the backs as he is with mixing it up front with the big boys. And he's one of the big boys. Let's be honest. Talking of forwards, though, I mean, obviously we saw Tupou coming in and we thought, hey, yeah, we know he's a good player. I think there was a bit of head scratching before this game around Ned Hannigan, though, getting selected on the blind side. But, I mean, to be fair to him, a couple of breaks, defended well. I thought he stood up today and had one of his better or even best games in a Wallabies jersey for me.
I go along with that. I thought he was very good. Played a big part in the play that led up to the try and carried strongly and gets over the advantage line. Everything that you can ask for at number six. Thought he was a little bit more quiet in the second half though.
Mm.
Yeah, but to be fair, I think until sort of like the game was near sort of over, you know, in terms of a contest, I think a lot of the Australians seemed to be quite quiet in that second half for that first sort of 20 minutes of the second half while the All Blacks dominated and took the game away from them.
As Aaron could, yeah, the kid from Mongeray can play.
Mangere.
I haven't got pronunciation there to get the wordplay working. But never mind. never mind. I tried to get it to rhyme, but it didn't, did it? Let's be honest. I'll be honest, I missed it, but a little bit worried about Antoine Brown going off early. I guess it was HIA because he came back on again afterwards, but I missed what actually happened there when Peter Mungensa came on.
It was a blood bin, but honestly, like we're sitting. I mean, just so the people at home, I sit in the West End. You're looking down the field. Leonard Brown's probably about the 30 on the 35 meter mark, so to speak, on the field. You can add another 50 on for how far away we are, so we're near close enough to 100 meters away from him. It looks like he's got a red mask on. There was so much blood on his face. It looks like he's got a red mask on. It was like, holy crap, he must have a massive wound. So shortly after that, yeah, he went off. There was a blood bin situation, not an HIA.
Cool. Okay. I missed that one. One of the talking
just before we move on, at that same point, I don't know if you guys saw it on TV, we saw something. The Australian manager was absolutely going off at the officials, and 2-3 officials were involved, and he was pointing on the field. I don't know, did anything on the TV broadcast cover that off at all? He was absolutely going off. He was really throwing his toys.
I know there was a leading up to one of the All Black tries, there was a clean out that was unseen, a side entry clean out, which the Australian players were complaining about. So whether it's the same incident, I don't think so,
because it's too early in the – that was – it was earlier in the game, way early in the game, so to speak, when Leonard Brown actually went off.
Yeah, that would be about the quarter-hour mark for that when that happened. No, they didn't mention anything. One of the – talking about this game, though, I want to talk about sort of last game was that Jordy Barrett was kicking threes. That experiment didn't last very long, and Richie Mwanga was kicking this weekend. Do you think last weekend was purely about home knowledge for Geordie in windy conditions? And is Richie the long term kicker? Do you think?
I don't think. I'm not sure what's going on there, to tell you the truth, because I do remember in watching last week's game, they did say that Geordie Barrett's actually got the higher percentage over Richie Mwanga, if I remember correctly. It is going back a week, and I am getting old, so I might have, you know, made it. But I do remember some comment along those lines last week when they were talking about the fact that Barrett was taking the kicking. So, and then, as you say, Mwanga is kicking this week, so I'm not sure whether just, you know, it's the modern environment, and we're just making sure that everybody has a fair turn.
Do they?
A little point from corrections corner here. Actually, not getting old. You are old.
got a couple of weeks to go. Harsh,
Steve. Sorry, yeah. Harsh.
I was going to suggest. Were they practicing the goal kicking at the pre-kickoff? Ashwin, was any of all the goal kickers having a cricket goal?
Actually, I don't remember them practicing goal kicking hugely before in the warm ups. I missed that part. Sorry. You're usually sort of cracking lots of gags with the people around you in the warm up. So, well, warm ups going on. So I might have missed that part actually, but it didn't feel like there was a lot of kicking practice going on.
No, they. I just wonder in the days leading up to the test if they have a bit of a practice, and whoever's striking the ball the best, maybe they
feeling good. Run,
but yeah, feeling good. You know, hitting it sweetly. I suppose it's a little bit like a golfer. Although I'm no golfer, but I would imagine good professional golfers have better days than other days. You know, and you get into a bit of a routine and get their confidence back.
Absolutely. Yep. I mean, it's just like like you say, like a golfer. It's just like this, the rhythm's all there, and so you go with who's feeling the best.
Now, so originally, obviously, knocked over the first points, but leading up to that, we in that first 17 minutes, the Australians had missed 14 tackles. Most of those to two players, really, in Bowden Barrett and Caleb Clark. Bowden Barrett, great on counter-attack this afternoon. And Caleb Clark coming in off his wing and doing an awful lot of work around the ruck and in field today. A player who got it really got himself involved.
That was the most impressive part of his of not just his work running. I mean, everybody's talking about his running, but his work rate. He cleaned up a ball on the sideline, and you know most wingers would have probably been picked up and driven over the touchline, but he still had the strength to actually stay in field. And he's just such a big unit. He's always going to commit two or three people around that breakdown area. No, boy, you want to talk about a dream debut and locking in a jersey in your first ever test. He's done it.
Starting debut, didn't he?
I was starting debut, yeah. Yeah, because he came on last week.
With the off the bench.
Well, even in a starting debut, in that little bite size sample we saw last week, he was pretty handy. So this week he had the full meal.
but you're right, you know, after last week's game and how disappointed All Blacks fans were, it's just like one thing that was the positive side that came out of it, everybody was saying, Caleb's got to start. So even in that sort of entree that he had last week, it's sort of like he made a mark. Come on. But he's sort of like he made his mark in that game last week and he just hammered it home this week, didn't he?
Oh, absolutely. And it makes you wonder what we've got coming up for dessert.
We find out in 2 weeks. Hey, look, one thing we saw from the All Black backline in general, so not obviously with Caleb, Geordie and Bowden Barrett, they were just running straight and hard at that line. And that was very different to last week. It's just like they get the ball and they weren't going wide. They were actually just going hard. And you know, Caleb Clark, second game, you know, debut starting match, gee, so much for young kids to watch and learn. Why do players run at the man? Caleb Clark, as big as he is, he runs at gaps. He doesn't run at the man. He runs at gaps. Whereas you see so many professional players these days run at the man. So, it's, you know, lot to like. So today, straighter running, really engaging the defense rather than just throwing it wide, which, yes, that last week, if you saw, I think, they got caught up going side to side a bit. The fence was set and you weren't really going forward. They weren't making any meters forward before going wide. This week, punch it up. Make that meter, 2 meters, 3 meters, 4 meters, and then you're starting to fracture the line and then go wide.
Yeah, and something we'll get onto later when we're talking about the Randfield Shield game and the number of sevens players they've got. But you've got to say that his time with the sevens team before being sort of brought into the full 15s, I think has helped his game. And if we look at things, Artie Surveyor's also come through the sevens program. I think Bowden did in his early days, didn't he? So we got it shows you the benefit of that sevens program that New Zealand Rugby run. And when you consider that England have just cut funding and cancelled their sevens program, similar things happened in Scotland as well. Look, if you run it properly, you're going to get some good players playing some good rugby coming through that program. So, that's showing its worth yet again with that one.
Hey, final thoughts on Caleb Clark and getting a starting debut. George Bridgeby sort of kicking himself for wanting to try and lift weights to keep up with the big boys?
Absolutely, because that's what whilst there was a lot of calls in the public for Caleb Clark to start this weekend. If George Bridge had been fit, I think he'd been on the bench again.
He still would have started. Yep.
George Bridge would have started.
George Bridge would have started.
Here's something a little bit crazy, guys. That 2017 under 20 New Zealand team that won the World Cup in Georgia give you an idea who came out of this team. Caleb Clark came out of that team. Braden Ennor came out of that team. Will Jordan came out of that team. Also, Geordie Barrett came out of that team. But also selected for that team, but he was injured, was Peter Umanga-Jensen. What a crazy strike rate to come out of that side. Also, Dalton Papali came out of that team. And also, currently, Asafo Amua came out of that team. What an amazing, that you'd have to say, that would be one of the better strike rates from a New Zealand under 20 team. Unfortunately, they haven't done anything since then.
Well, it goes back to the, you know, we had another under 20s team like years before that one, because we do it, and that sort of produced a truckload of All Blacks out of it as well. So it seems to be a wave comes through, doesn't it?
You know, I don't think it's stopped there, because there was Luke Jacobson was also in that side. But if you look at some of the other players who could possibly be All Blacks from this particular team, I look at somebody, and we'll get to them a little bit early. Did I mention Dalton Papali'i? But also Marino Mikaeli too, as well, was also in that team. My God. And then you think of somebody who plays for Harbour, like Jacob Pearce, who everybody's tagging to be an All Black. That could be just insane.
Well, let me just, as I happen to have written an article on these guys about 4 or 5 years ago now, let's have a look at the class of 2011 from that under-20s team.
That's the one I was referring to, I think.
Sakalia in the one jersey, Cody Taylor, Ben Tamanifuna, Steve Luatua at four, Brody Retallick, Brad Shields, Sam Kane, and Luke Whitelock is your back row.
Wow.
TJ Perenara, Gareth Anscombe, Charles Piatau, Lima Sopawanga, Francis Saili, Mitchell Scott, and Bowden Barrett. coming off the bench, we've got Dominic Bird, Brad Webber, Waizaki Naholo. So not a bad strike rate there. International rugby.
I wonder who'd win that game, the 2011 team or the 2017 team.
I'll go 2-11.
I'd go the 2-17 right team right now.
Oh, right now, yeah, because they're younger.
Sorry, guys, got us off the track.
Digressing again.
If you look at that, I mean, out of that 2-11 team, I think 14 out of 15 of those guys have got on to the starting 15 have gone on to play international rugby. Maybe 13 out of 14. Mitchell Scott probably not. But that's an amazing strike rate there.
I know we've wildly gone off the track on terms of talking about the game, but I mean, like Aaron says, not necessarily George Bridge, who I always felt was a bit of a stopgap measure, to be fair. But Sevu Reese, he was the guy, the fans' favourite in terms of a winger only last year. The twinkling feet.
To be fair to those two guys, they'd actually played their way in. Because Rico Ioane's form had very much dropped off the radar, and I was just trying to consider who the other winger who may have dropped off.
Waisaki Naholo.
Yeah, Waisaki Naholo had dropped off the radar. Julian Savia had gone overseas, so you're probably right. It's a bit harsh to call them stopgap, but I know what you mean. They were guys.
Not so much Sevu Reese, but I mean, to me, George Bridge was like he's an industrious player that makes the right call.
He's still a good player. He's a sort of guy, you know. It's good to hang around. I mean, to say you get a day where it's a wet conditions, wet underfoot. You know, he's probably not a bit. You know, he's a guy. He's going to do most of his basics.
Basics.
Well.
Yep.
I would like to think it's best that we have still somebody on the shelf that we can utilize, especially if there's injuries. It's pretty handy to be able to call in those sort of guys. I'm sort of kind of answering Aaron's question. Hey, mate, you're only an injury or two away from coming back in the squad.
Coming back.
So you wouldn't exactly go for somebody completely new. You'd look at either Sevu Reese or George Bridge. But we also know Will Jordan can also play on the wing as well.
Hey, Caleb Clark's got a lot of hamstring muscle there to sort of have an issue with.
yes, he definitely does. So let's just run through the that then. So we then The All Blacks were doing great with turnover ball, and we had then the kick through. Geordie Barrett chased, tackled Corabetti, forced him over the line to touch it down, which meant a 5 meter scrum. Off that back of that 5 meter scrum, we had Goodhue going close, and then Aaron Smith sniping over to score. Jack Goodhue, a much better game this weekend. Again, running hard and straight and getting over that game line rather than necessarily trying to do too much, just trying to keep his game pretty simple.
He didn't start too well. His first pass hit the ground, and poor old Caleb with those big twitch muscles had to bend down and pick up a bit of a shocker of a pass and knocked it on. That wasn't his fault. So it wasn't so much accurate, but I think they did the right thing. They went a little bit more direct, because I think one player who never dropped his standards in the All Blacks today was actually the All Blacks skipper. His carrying ability is just, you know, we look at Avi Savea, good carrier, Frizzell, good carrier, but they just at some stage had to be direct, and they were direct on that occasion. He got his nose through the advantage line, and the forwards got there quick enough, and that left the opportunity for Aaron Smith easy, really, at the end of the day.
So for the All Blacks, on the carrying side of things, Jack Goodhue carried 10 times, as did Anthony Brown, as did Bowden Barrett, as did Sam Kane. Sam Kane carried 10 times. And you're quite right, Aaron. I did just totally just skip the first name in case I said Josh Goodhue by accident.
Aaron did that at the game today. And then we said, you did a Paul.
I'll tell you what, Josh, I know Josh watches this show sometimes, he'd be celebrating knowing that he did that against the Wallabies. Not
the lots of carrying by Sam Kane, and then he also topped the tackle count with 14 tackles. Again, the top All Black for tackling, same number as Ned Hannigan, interestingly enough. Captain Kane really stood up, and I think has answered a lot of critics as to should he be in the team, is he worthy of his jersey. The answer is a resounding yes.
For me, with Sam Kane, I mean, he was the best defensive number seven by a long way, you know, that we've got. I always had question marks over his attacking game and whether he gets involved in the attacking side of it enough, especially as a seven. But I think today, you know, he was there. He was there in the attacking game. Obviously, he scored a try. So, and there was a couple other touches that he had as well. So, all round brilliant game today from him.
Yep. Then we had the Wallabies came back legally targeting Barrett as well, putting him under pressure. But then Hannigan makes that break, gives it to Hooper, quick ruck and then it goes out wide and they score with a good touchline conversion as well. And it was definitely game on at that stage. We'd had a lot of play from the Wallabies before then, but no points, and they really needed and deserved that one.
Yeah, a little bit of get run against play, I felt, because, I mean, apart from the strong start that they had, the All Blacks did feel like at the ground anyway, that the All Blacks were sort of having the better moments of the game, whereas the Wallabies weren't. And obviously in this lead up to this try is obviously where Joe Moody gets knocked out as well. So, and then Hannigan goes through that gap. But one thing, I mean, I know our fellow member on the panel that pops in every now and then, John O'Connor, mentioned in our own sort of messengers that they were targeting Mawanga channel. But to be honest, at the ground, it didn't feel that way. What it felt like is that the Australians were actually going wide and with purpose and accurately. And so it felt like they were getting awesomely quick ball. They were really getting their clean out happening, getting that ball going wide and exposing the numbers on the outside channels regularly. In this situation here, obviously Hannigan's gone straight up the guts, bumped off Moody, and then they've got it wide. But I just thought that their dynamic game of the Australians was actually quite good in terms of getting that ball, the razzle dazzle, that sort of and passing using the back line.
There's a Paul, it's a very similar style to where the Australians played in the in the late 80s and 90s. Very, very quick ball movement, changing direction very, very quickly. They just weren't quite accurate. The timing, at times their timing was a little bit out. You saw one there where Marika, Korobeti basically got himself into position to be that extra man. And all he really did had to do was basically take the pass and shift it. And they had some really good space to operate. I think the problem for the Australian,
he was rocks and diamonds today, wasn't he?
Yeah, he had
moments where he absolutely was awful, and other moments where he was really good. Korobeti, unfortunately, yeah, seemed a bit stone-handed today.
Yeah, just on defence, I mean, so they might have been targeting Moanga, but I thought that stop in the corner was just absolutely superb. Who did he hold up in the corner? Was Korobeti?
That's Korobeti. Yep.
That he held up in the corner, that was absolutely fantastic. Going off target. Okay.
Now, before we go off on, before we talk about the referees, though, I'm going to agree here that I don't think they were targeting Richard Moanga's channel. If they were, it failed because he had to make four tackles. He made two, he missed two. But when you think that Jack Goodhue made 13, missed one, Antoinette Brown made 13, missed nil, yeah, they were moving it wider than
the Richard moving Moanga. It wide. The ball was, yeah. And they were doing it well. Most of the time, they were doing it well. It was always like, well, here we, you know, again, when you sit on the West Stand, you get a great perspective on where the gaps are, which side they should go, and when they go the wrong way, anyway, but that's another story. But yeah, you can see, like, here we go, they've got the numbers on the All Blacks, can they manipulate it? And they were getting forward momentum, they were outflanking the All Blacks, and were getting forward up the field. Obviously, they weren't quite able to finish it, though, that's the issue that they've got to resolve.
Yeah, we'll do this very quickly, but touch on the refs. Angus Garden had a good game. Not much more to need to say, really.
Not much more you can say about that. The only thing is, and this worked both ways, it wasn't like he was favouring one team at all. There was a lot. He needs to just tighten up on players coming through the gate. Both sides were sending players that were cleaning out from the side. They weren't coming through the gate. Great angle to see it from at the West End.
What I do like about Angus Gardner, they're a really great communicator. He's communicating, you know, communicating with the players, telling them what they should be doing and not wrong. I mean, to say, for example, Joe Moody with the penalty, he gave him plenty of opportunity to let him know, get your hands off the ball. And Moody just wasn't fast enough. And, of course, the penalty. I like him as a ref.
Yeah, Steve will be disappointed. Old Cornflake Steve, though, because no cards were handed out.
Yeah, exactly. I know. Yeah. Angus Gardner. I mean, it's just, his name's just fantastic. Jordan's, yeah, exactly where I was going to go next. We lost to Moore soon after that try. From when he was kicking the ball, looks like he did his own groin. And losing to Moore at that point and that double playmaker axis that the Wallabies were using, I think it was a massive loss for them just before half-time.
Yeah, look. Yeah, because when Jordan Pataia came on, one moment I remember in the game, I'm pretty sure it must have been in the first half because they were coming. Second half, and it's just like he's there's numbers. The Australians had numbers, and they were close enough to the line that if they crashed at a gap, they would have made it over the line. But he took the ball and he ran sideways, and he kept running sideways, and the defense just basically all gathered in on him and took him out of play, and the Australians were left with numbers unmarked. So, yeah, I think you could be right with Tamua going in a bit of an experience there. Maybe I think with the number of injuries that Pataia's had, it's got to have having an effect on his confidence and sort of, you know, that happens, right, with most players. So I just sort of think that was a crazy error that he made where it just felt like, you know, you're watching a under-9s game and it's like, I've got the ball and I'm going to go score the try and do it for the team. It's just like, no, all you had to do was draw and pass and it probably would have been scored.
Yeah. The All Blacks came out the sheds at pace, created space for showed great patience after that. I think it was one of the big things that they showed. I mean, it was a very fast pace in the first half. The second half, they came out, they played pace, but were patient, waited until they got the overlap for Jordy Barrett to basically walk over untouched to score out wide. I'm still to be convinced about Jordy as a winger. I think he's a wonderful player, but I think he's a fullback or a centre, not really a winger. But today he played well on the wing. First off, chasing to put Corabetti over, and then keeping his width to score that try. And obviously, having his boots on the pitch is always a big help. But yeah, it was good to see that the patience was the big thing that they probably talked about in the sheds for that one. And then, well, 3 minutes later, kicking to Caleb Clark in the middle of the pitch, and then not having a first up tackle on him was a disaster, as he, yes, basically showed, added a piece of play that will probably be in his highlight reel for the rest of his career, as he just broke up the middle of the pitch, got through, I don't know, 6-7 tackles, and ended up, basically running up, 50, 60 metres to set up the next try.
Oh, wrong, obviously. You've been buzzed out. Yeah,
been buzzed out.
Look, now you made me lose my thought what I was going to say, but that was just amazing. I think what we talked about before in terms of awesome debut match and last week, and then the starting debut this week, but that's the moment that basically he announced himself to the world, is that play there. I mean, there'd been obviously lots of other great things that he'd done, but that moment is just like, yeah, look out, world, here I come.
Barrett in the whole game had 5 tackles, had 5 defenders beaten. I think Caleb Clark did that in that one run. He finished off with 9 in total.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've seen a fairly solidly built guy in a number 11 jersey bumping people out of the way like that, isn't it, fellas? I can't recall. Did Julian Salvia wear the 14 jersey?
Julian was 11.
He was wearing the 11. So yeah, he sort of like joined a trinity of big wingers that can beat defenders at will. But, I think what Caleb's got is just that extra, as opposed to Julian. I think he's got a little bit more speed in the jandals, so to speak. Just an incredible debut. But, we spoke before about his work rate as well. Let's not just forget his work rate. And I love the way the All Blacks used him to get over the advantage line in that lead-up to Jordy Barrett's try.
Eventually, right? In terms of we were sitting there in that game and we're sort of thinking, what are you guys doing? Just get the ball to Caleb with one-on-one, which they had opportunities to do. And it's just like the pass wouldn't go to him. And it's just like, just give him the ball. And then they finally started to do that.
Yeah, yeah. We make the best experts when we're sitting from the stand.
Oh, totally. I'm an All Black selector in the West End, dude. You know that.
I play my best rugby watching from the television set. You know that.
And after he's also head of referees as well.
You know it. You know it. I can't help it if I keep making the right call.
Whilst we talk about he's been the latest big 11. The big difference between Julian and Caleb is where they're running. Julian basically stuck out in his wing and played out there, whereas Caleb is roving all over the park. Very different style of play between the two of them.
That probably comes down to another part of his after-match conversation that he had, where he sort of says, I'll probably have to go home and Dad will put it on the TV and I'll have to sit there with Dad and he'll tell me what I did wrong. That was on the Sky TV aftermatch conversation they had with them. So it's like, yeah, Dad will make me watch this and he'll say, I could have done this better, I could have done that better.
I don't know. Dad looked plenty happy watching from the stands. Let's be honest. I don't think Dad looked happy. That made it 20-7. And really felt that the Wallabies had to score next. They very nearly did. Corabetti bashing over in the corner, Richie Mwanga getting underneath him and holding him up amazingly. Look, I was thinking, oh, look at this. This is Corabetti showing all his different skills he's learned, that he's brought over from league, and then gets held up. And then what amazed me was, Corabetti still had the presence of mind, which shows you, which would to, he's like, I'm held up. There's Tom Banks coming in. I'll pass it up to Tom Banks. And that's probably the first time I've seen someone do an offload in the end zone or in the try area to another player. Now,
for a touchdown.
Well, it would have been a touchdown if...
in the end zone.
If Tom Banks had managed to get it down. But he didn't. He got held up as well as Jordy and somebody else came back to help out. So, that showed the work rate and the want to win by this All Blacks team to hold up a player like that in the corner and then to hold up the next player. But I thought it was really good, awareness by Corabetti to offload that ball to Banks.
We couldn't quite, we could see that Corabetti was held up. Did he actually offload at Tom Banks and then he got held up as well?
Yes.
Ah, right.
Which was, so yeah, that all happened over the line. So you're kind of like, yeah, that was, that was impressive. They then had a line out maul with a disallowed try for a second movement. Now,
second, third, and fourth.
Well, okay. He goes down, his arm's trapped underneath him. He lifts himself up to free his arm, and then he reached forward to put it down. Now, that lifting up, unfortunately, onto his knees was the second movement. He got himself in the wrong position when he went down the first time.
He uses his arms to sort of get up and move forward, but he also uses his knee to propel forward as well.
Oh, yeah. He gets up onto all fours and then reaches and puts down. But he couldn't reach from where he was originally because he was basically laying on his arm.
Yeah. So then you've made the two movements, right? It looked at the time watching it live, it's like, that didn't look right. Watching it live, right? Because it was right down in front of us. It's like, that doesn't look right. And this is like, nah, it didn't look right.
Yeah, it didn't look right. But it's kind of like, he didn't sort of pull himself up and then lunge forward like you've seen, or crawl like you've seen other ones. It's like, something's wrong there, but I'm not quite sure exactly quite what. It's not quite right, but kind of thing.
Good work by Sam Kane, actually. He's the one that actually, well, I mean, like, I don't think it makes that much of a difference, but, you know, it still makes them think about it, right? He goes into the referee and says, he's on his knees. Have a look, he's on his knee. He's moved on to his knee and moved forward from the knee. And it's very shortly after that, it was like, oh, yeah, no try.
Yep. In between those two, on 50 minutes, we had the remainders of the All Blacks front row replaced, which I thought was pretty early, and showed faith in the bench to bring on the other reserve prop and the other hooker.
Nipo Lalala.
There we go.
Cody Taylor.
Those two. So I thought it was pretty early to be changing to your second front row, but I guess with plenty of test matches coming up, it's good to rotate the players and give them all a bit of game time.
You thought it was early that they changed the props. I mean, apart from obviously for Moody and Hodgman had to come on. Isn't that sort of part of the script at sort of a 30 to go at the 50-minute mark? You change your props? That seems to be always written in the Bible, so to speak, as to thou shalt replace your props at 50.
I thought it was closer to 60 than 50.
I said to the people around me, this is like, they said, oh, how come they're bringing, how come they're changing the props? And I was like, dude, it's 50 minutes. That's what they do. So I've always felt that.
So soon after that, we had the ball ripped in the tackle. Jordy Barrett finds his brother on the break. Patrick Tuipulotu shows some really nice hands and a net ball pass, not a basketball pass, I'm going to say. Out to Sam Kane to score. So again, quickly attacking off the off turnover ball. Also in the second half, actually, one thing I mentioned, there seems to be more kicking early in the second half as well from both sides, which plays into the All Blacks' hands, who like broken field play to attack from, which is what you can get from kicking duels as well. And that's what saw, yeah, that thing that was part of the reason that we saw the All Blacks pull away and win this one, obviously, apart from the two disallowed tries. We've got to remember, the Wallabies did go close in those two and could easily have been within striking distance come the end if those had gone their way. They didn't quite, though. Other players, I thought that TJ Perenara came on and had a really put himself about. Any other players you want to have a quick mention of before we flip over to the Mitesen Cup and Farrer Park Cup?
No, I just think for... I just think from the Aussies' point of view, just an observation last week, Nick White was very, very good. I thought today he was quiet. They negated him. Dalgoonie, who was good last week, once again was quiet. It seemed as though the All Blacks marked him very, very well. I'll tell you what, they will develop into a good back line, especially with the Dalgoonie and Corabetti on the wings, and also Banks. They've got running in them, no question whatsoever. And I think once they get used to each other's game, I think they'll go great guns. Tamua, real big loss for them. But listen, in the end, I mean, so that if I can give them a bit of credit, most Australian teams with 25, I think we scored our final try at about the 54th minute. So that's 25 minutes we went without points. And I think an Australian team maybe a year ago or 2 years ago would have conceded way more points. So at least they hung in there and stayed in the fight. And, you know, they probably created some opportunities which they just didn't take through poor handling in that last quarter.
Oh, look, I totally agree. I mean, as I've said a few times through the show today, is that their back line was operating well. They were creating opportunities. Yeah, they didn't convert them today, but they know that it's working for them. They were getting the numbers. They had, you know, 3-on-5 overlaps regularly and the like. You know, numbers, not just one extra number out there. They'd have multiple extra numbers out there. So I don't think that they need to panic or, you know, get disappointed too much. Hey, it didn't pan out on the day today, but it's still coming together, and I think it's going in the right direction. It looks like it's going in the right direction for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Two weeks' time at ANZ Stadium, they're going to have 40,000 there, you know.
I don't know. Are they? That's one thing. Do we know that they can have crowds in Australia?
Yeah, they can, but they won't be able to completely fill it. From what I understand, they can have up to 40,000 there, but that'll still be a good home crowd, no question. Maybe half of it will be Kiwis.
Actually, a couple of players we talked about quite a bit last week: Lucan, Saikai Lotto, and Matt Phillip. Not quite as evident this weekend as they were last weekend.
I think, to be honest, I think it comes back to a comment that I think Jordan made. The All Blacks front. No team. It's very hard for a backline to operate or be successful if their forward pack isn't doing anything. Right. Last week, the fire in that All Blacks pack really wasn't to the level expected. Today it was. And, you know, I think that would have meant that you didn't give, you know, what we've taught names that we just talked about with like Phillips and Solokai, weren't able to because they weren't given the time and space or the ability to do what they did last week because they were getting shut down because the All Blacks were playing with a bit more intensity than they did last week.
Yep. So cracking game. Two very good Bledisloe Cup games we've had now the last two weekends. And you say, we get a weekend off to breathe, and then we're back again is it in 2 weekends' time?
Yep, two weekends' time. Yep.
Over in Oz. So looking forward to that game as well. Moving on then, let's go Farrow Palmer Cup first up. Hawke's Bay versus Manawatu 2. Finished 12-29. And that meant that Manawatu 2 secured themselves as the second berth in the South Division ahead of Wellington and Otago. And they fought it out 27-24 in their game. The other game in the South Division saw Canterbury beat Tasman 84-0. Which I think was pretty much what we were expecting from that kind of game. In the Northern Division then, Bay of Plenty lost to Northland 0-32, which I think is a bit of a surprise, to be honest with you, with that one. Bay of Plenty, a decent side. To be nilled by Northland, that's an impressive performance by Northland women's there. Even if it wasn't enough to force them into the playoff picture, unfortunately. But they've had a real breakout season this season. And Stephen?
Yeah, Paul, I was about to say, probably the difference in their season was probably Crystal Murray, dropping the ball close to the line in the game against Auckland. The conversion would have given them a draw or a share of the spoils that day, and that 1 point was probably would have been enough to just finish in front of Auckland and would have given them a semi-final placing, I believe, because the top two in each round go through to the semi-final. So we're looking at, is it Canterbury, Manawatu, Waikato and Auckland?
No, it's not.
No.
We'll get on.
No, Waikato, Auckland played today.
Okay.
So then the other game there, Auckland lost to Waikato 17-26, which meant that left them on. That was before the All Blacks game. Were you there for that one, Arshan?
Yeah. Well, I was there for the second half.
Yep.
Most of the second half. Yeah. So I'd written the game off, tell you the truth, because Waikato jumped out to a big lead. And then really, Auckland should have actually been able to come back and win that one, even though, you know, there's still, what 10-point gap? 9-point gap? They were all over Waikato with about 10 minutes to go. They could have easily scored the points that they needed. Just the lack of accuracy. No speed in the back line. Yeah. And that's what killed them. They created opportunities where basically they got shut down because their back line didn't have the pace in it to take advantage of the what was created.
And the final game was Taranaki versus Counties, 3-107. That means that Counties have racked up the two biggest scores of this season, beating Harbour 89-3 in the opening round and Taranaki 3-107 in the last round. And that was
What was Canterbury Tasman's score? That was a century, wasn't it? I thought that was a century.
Canterbury Tasman was 84-0, 89-3 The two highest scores were by Counties. There were a few scores in the 80s, but there was during the season. But those 2 points differences were enough to see Counties finish ahead of Auckland and Northland to claim that second place, as they all finished on the same number of points. That means that the two semi-finals will be Canterbury versus Counties Manukau and Waikato hosting Manawatu next weekend. Times to be announced as to when those games will be. But congratulations to those teams. Moving on to the Mighty Ten Cup. Sorry?
Paul, I was just going to say that's really interesting because in the Wharepalma Cup on Tribe, they've got Waikato playing the Manawatu Cyclones and Canterbury playing Auckland.
Yeah. That's what I'm just checking the table. Because that's what I was going to say to you, Paul. We need to talk about this table and how it's worked out. Mm-hmm. So I'm just trying to bring the table up. The official website for the Might of 10 is, I'm just making sure it's 2020, is showing Auckland finishing in fourth position in the North Pool. So, I think you've got it right in terms of Counties Manukau in second place. I think the tribe's got it, needs to update that. Because there's no way Auckland's points difference, there's three teams finishing on 21, so you can't do who beat who, even though Auckland actually beat both of those teams. And then Counties and Northland have actually got a massively superior. Hang on.
Tiebreakers. Most competition points against other tied teams. Oh, dear. So it's going to depend on how Auckland, Northland, and Counties games all finish. Too complicated.
Auckland beat both Counties and Northland.
So that's why they're going to finish second.
But that's wrong. So they've stuffed up.
I think Counties may have beaten Auckland.
Did they? I thought Auckland beat Counties.
Maybe we'll clarify that tomorrow night, Paul, on the show.
Yes. Maybe we'll, yeah.
Anyway. There is conjecture.
It was tight. That's a big word. Division. The second place. I think we can safely say. With Auckland, right. Northland, and Counties finishing on all of 21 points, and we'll let you know who grabs the semi-final berth.
Is it going to matter? I mean, like, should we just give Canterbury the trophy again?
Well, I was going to say, yeah, with the pleasure of travelling down to County of down to Canterbury and probably losing, to be honest, next weekend.
Anyway. To be honest, I think out of the four teams that Waikato, Counties, Northland, Auckland, the team with the best chance of challenging Canterbury is actually Counties.
Yes and no. But the problem the counties have had is that when they've played the weaker teams, they've thrashed them. When they've played some of the stronger teams, they've struggled a bit. So
they've struggled a bit. Yep. Fair enough. So but I just...
To use cricketing parlance, are they flat track bullies?
Flat track, yeah. But the other thing is that looking at the Waikato squad, they don't actually have a... Their team, when you look at their team, is basically the same size in the forwards and the backs. Their forward pack is very small.
I just got to say, I'm a bit biased, guys, but it's a shame Northland didn't get through because I think they would have been a real rough diamond. I mean, so like Paul said, that 32-0 scoreline of the Bay of Plenty is an impressive scoreline, and I do believe they've actually got a bit of X factor in there. So any team that's got Portia Woodman, and yeah. I guess it's a case of give Caleb the ball, give Portia the ball.
Portia the ball. That's been in New Zealand rugby in women's rugby for a while, hasn't it? It's like give Portia the ball. Every time she gets the ball, it's like, wait, woohoo, let's go.
Yeah, good season for Makaurie though.
Sorry, we will clarify who is in that semi-final berth on the morning sports briefing tomorrow, if it's clear on the website. If it's not, then it will have to wait until the following morning sports briefing. Tomorrow evening, we do not have the driving more folks. We do have a schedule change, and Swinging from the Hip will be at 8 p.m. tomorrow evening in its new slot on a Monday evening for our cricket show. If Ashwin is ready, if he's done his planning.
What planning? I've got a full day of work tomorrow. Oh!
There you go.
So it might be an alfresco. Yeah, off the cuff.
An alfresco, unplugged.
Swing from the hip, unplugged.
The Mighty 10 Cup then. Ranfurly Shield, Friday evening. Northland having opportunities, not putting them away. Hawke's Bay putting away their opportunities, winning 33-17.
You just want to make Steve cry.
You pretty much summed it up in one. You've hit it right on the head. Northland's tactics, where anybody playing Hawke's Bay, you don't want them to get their line out drive more into the game. So what you do is you make sure you play most of the game in their half. And for that first 30 minutes, Hawke's Bay were playing out of their quarter, kicking the ball straight back to Northland. They changed, they tweaked their tactics at halftime. You can catch up with all our interviews on New Zealand Sport Radio. Check it out. And just talking to their coaches, they changed their tactics. They decided to use their line out a bit more, get a bit more attacking position, and they gradually ground Northland down, and a Northland side that just made far too many basic errors. Even though they fought back to 21-10, I think it is, straight from the kickoff, Scott Gregory drops the ball, end of game. Move on.
I was locked up yesterday to counting in the election, so hence I missed all these games. But Manawatu versus Bay of Plenty, 35-53, high scoring affair, with the Bay of Plenty as expected coming out on top. Anything from the games particularly, guys?
Yep, I've got something from that game, guys. The two coaches got together at the beginning of the game and said, "Tell you what, guys, today tackling is optional." There was none. So hence you had a whole lot of points. Both teams would be absolutely disappointed with their defensive. I think it's an incredible stat, the amount of missed tackles from both teams. Unfortunately for Manawatu, capable of scoring points, but unfortunately they leak a whole lot of points. And we'll go to Ashwin because he was at the Tasman Auckland game.
I just want to get back to the Northland Hawke's Bay Northland game. And it's just like I think we need to just have a quick chat about one player. And I think Steve's going to know who Scott Gregory. I mean, to me, I'm sorry, but he's a player that is going missing. He's going missing. I mean, I don't know. We've talked about whether he might be still having niggles or injuries. Maybe he shouldn't be playing, and he should be getting over that injury, etc. But at the end of the day, he's a young player. People say, "Oh, he's a young player." He's a young player with lots of experience. He's played so much international sevens rugby, and he's not just the fact that he's played lots of international sevens rugby. He's one of their senior members, effectively, in that squad.
Yeah.
And to do some of the things that he does on a rugby field in the 15s game, you'd be pulling your hair out as a coach because you're sort of looking to him as being one of your experienced players that does the right thing and leads the team around, and he's not delivering.
There's a train of thought apart from the coaching staff. That he's not a fullback. He's a guy, if you recall, Whangarei Boys High School, he either played first five or second five all of a sudden you turn him into a fullback. Very, very similar scenario to Michael Collins, who was at the Blues. They turned him into a fullback as well. There's a train of thought that he's more suited to the midfield. But, you know, coaches, it's their prerogative at the moment. A guy I forgot to mention, Finlay Christie's been playing some great rugby, but boy, are we starting to see the best of Sam Knock at the moment, because his running is absolutely devastating. Got a great high kick game, and the defensive work that he does in that Northern team is purely amazing. Now we can go back to Paul and we can cover that game that I missed, because there was another game on at the same time as the
Tasman Auckland.
He missed that Wellington versus Harbour 25-20. With Harbour, look, they really have bounced back, shown there's a lot of grit about them. But I believe a Julian Surveyor last minute try from I don't know what I've seen, a tweet or something, was the difference between these two sides. And yeah, Harbour really are putting it to teams now, having beaten Tasman recently. They have really stepped up.
I didn't see the game. Did you see the game, Steve? Or
yeah, I did.
Tell us about the end.
Oh, listen, basically, Wellington deserved their win. The first half, Harbour looked really good, and then Wellington changed their tactics. They started targeting the wings with high kicks, sort of Sean Stevenson. And, you know, Sean Stevenson, he can be rocks and diamonds. Dropped a couple of kicks, which gave Wellington the possession, and they slowly roped North Harbour in, because I think one stage North Harbour were up by a decent score. Their trip, I think they might have even been up 21-7.
Out of rope a dope
at some stage. But, you know, full credit to Wellington, they really worked their way back into this game, and their hooker played really well. Not us, Amua, the other guy that normally starts. Just his name escapes me. I'll do a pull. I've gone blank.
I've gone blank.
that guy, he played O'Reilly
was the hooker for
O'Reilly had an absolutely fantastic game. He was one of the standouts. And as Aaron said, Harbour should have won. They had plenty of chances at the end of the game. But and so he had some line-out drives right at the end, but could not get it right for some reason. And,
that's what I was asking about the end of the game, because I just read, I was reading the Tribe app as this is when the game's finished, and I mentioned about Taramai driving towards the line. And then the whistle went after that.
Just one of those things, just a bad day at the office in the back half of that game for North Harbour.
Yeah, so Julian's try actually was 65 minutes in, not at the death like I was suggesting earlier. So there we go. Then Austrian, yeah, so you were at Auckland versus Tasman. Auckland beating Tasman 31-10. Wow. I mean,
what a surprise. I did a Steve, you know, it wasn't the All Blacks game, but I was just like, you know, got to the game and took a picture, did a selfie with my son, as we do, you know, and so it's like, Here at Eden Park, I should say at Cooper's Catch Park, it was like, you know, not expecting the W, but we're here, and it's just like, boy, did they 4 tries in the first half, and one thing that's just stood out massively. So okay, let's take a little bit of a step back. Auckland, the forwards have been doing really well. Accuracy's been a little bit missing, just short of the sort of accuracy that they need to have. So, but they've been going well, but the back line's been dysfunctional, basically. Really no penetration, nothing really happening there. Yesterday, I don't know, I'm putting it down to Zane Sullivan making his starting debut for the Blue and Whites. Huge difference. He made a huge difference coming in to that back line. His presence in the back line as well. It's like, I'm doing this, everybody. And so everybody knows what he's doing. And so they get it, you know, it's not guesswork, right? And it's just like they know what Zahn's going to be doing. And, I just think he ran that back line effectively.
And that's right. He's running that from fullback. Mm. Not even from, he's
like, not from first five. Not from first five. No.
Yeah. Just to tick on what Ashwin said, I think he added a bit of stability at the back. Really, really good positive option taking. But I also thought best game I've seen from both Ruru and Plummer as a combination. I thought they ran the cutter for Auckland really, really well. And listen, ably led up front by, unfortunately, and it's going to be a big loss for Auckland, Jack Whetton. He just ran that. I thought Jack Whetton just marshalled that pack absolutely brilliant. And I thought the three Lucys were very, very good. In fact, they got absolutely stuck into Tasman, and Tasman were never able to get in that game. And at the end of the day, they were lucky to get
ten.
Yeah. They were lucky to get 10, seriously. Yep. But there was an incident in the game, Paul, where Ashwin and I tend to differ. This guy is in that I'm going to lift him in the line out. You've got to bring him up and bring him down safely. By the way, you know, that's what happens when you let him go.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but what's missing from that picture is a red arm that's just rushing the man and bringing him down the other side.
I haven't got a red arm there.
Now, what people don't know is Steve's had that security blanket since he was 5.
I know.
Give him hugs. I need hugs.
When my wife's doing night shift, he's right here with me. So, but anyway, the two props, I think Marco Fapulio, and I think the other prop was, help me out here, Jared Adams.
Yeah,
as a friend texted me today, those two props should have been yellow carded or red carded for not bringing the player down safely. So it's just an unfortunate accident. But yeah, I'll be curious to have a look at it if you get a chance. It wasn't good, and more importantly, let's hope that Jack Whetton, the injury isn't too serious. I haven't read anything online as yet, but
yeah, I haven't heard anything either. It's quite disappointing, you know, and this is one of our complaints that we've had over the years, is that lack of information that comes out to keep fans engaged. So this is a good example of it. I mean, fans will be waiting to know how he is, how he pulled up. I know that he did give the thumbs up when the mini ambulance was rolling off the field, so hopefully that's a good sign. But just in terms of Harry Plummer, just coming back to the, I have to agree with you. I mean, I don't think Harry Plummer's done anything flash, even when when Blues were going well. I thought, you know, he's been, I won't say struggling, but it's just, you know, it was not great. You know, it's not great. I mean, but yesterday's game against quality opposition as well. It's not like some. You know, that's a full Super Rugby backline that they were up against. He did well. His option taking was good, etc. So option taking across the Auckland backline was surprisingly good. You know, it's just not something we've seen in the last rounds leading up to this.
Here's a prediction. If you think Caleb Clark is good at the moment, Rayasi on the wing is absolutely outstanding. I think he's been one of the standout wingers in the Mitre 10 Cup, and he just, once again, like Caleb Clark, just has strength, and he's so good. Anything in the air, he just absolutely swallows up. He stands in the tackle, and I'm predicting he will. It's not a matter of if he'll be an All Black, it's a matter of when.
How old is he? He's been around for a while now, though. Anybody know how old he is?
We're Googling. There
we go. He's only 24. Okay. I just wonder, though, I mean, like, was it the right move for him to move down to the Hurricanes? I just sort of think he would have got game time with the Blues.
Yep. I'll be signing him.
Yeah. And it's just like, I mean, with his form that he's started to just show in the last two games, because he's been a bit quiet leading up to that, but in the last two games, he's been dynamic. Is he going to usurp the Canes wingers that they'll have for next year? Because, yeah, you know, you sort of looked at the roster that they had, and it's just like, oh, he might not get a crack next year either.
I'm not sure he's even rostered there this year. I don't think did he have a contract there this year?
Yeah, that exactly. You know, that sums it up, Paul. That sums it up. No, he's a Canes. He's on the Canes roster.
Because I'm looking at the roster on Wikipedia at the moment, and he's not listed.
Great performance from Auckland. Really good performance.
Yeah, look, there was 31-0 ahead. This, yeah, as you say, the Tasman were, it was way too little, too late. This game was done and dusted just after.
The interesting thing was that basically Tasman where Auckland actually won it, although their backline, obviously, we've waxed lyrical about the backline, but where they actually won it was in the forwards. They tickled up the Tasman forwards. Really, when they in that first half, when Tasman had the ball, they were just going backwards.
Yeah, we had a fellow on the social network bemoaning the fact that they had all these players missing, and I just silently reminded this chap of who they actually had in their team, and they've actually got depth that probably 10 other unions in the Mitre 10 Cup haven't got.
So, yeah, no, you're right. Well, Austin, he is down. He just isn't down on one of the other pages. Is the Hurricanes. Absolutely. So moving on then to the next game, Southland lost to Taranaki 9-17. I watched that. You know, that was also on Saturday. So again, I've not seen that one either. Taranaki, boy, did they need that win.
Yep, very, very much so. And anybody who watched that game for the entire 80 minutes, we're sending a medal. We're sending a medal and chocolates for sitting through the whole 80 minutes, because I tried to watch it. It was a very hard watch. Southland, credit to them, they stayed in the fight, but I think Taranaki might have been just the one try in this game, Paul. Taranaki scored. I can't get into my tribe, unfortunately, but to me the real difference was just really in the halves. And the disappointing thing for Dale McLeod, will be really disappointed with his drivers. I mean, to say you're chasing the game with about 15 minutes to go and you're still kicking ball away, go figure.
Yeah, and also had the yellow card for Taranaki during that period as well, and still couldn't get any points, which, yeah.
And then, you know, lack of critical thinking at the critical part of the game. Instead, with about five minutes remaining, when they had a kick in front of, just to the side of the uprights, Southland decided to go to the corner when they were behind by 8 points. So it's like, no, take the three and then get up there to score the try. Don't try and score the try, and then we might get a penalty. You've got the penalty. Try and get the easy three, and then try and score the converter or the five-pointer. So, yes. And then ironically, the game's over. Hooters about to go. They get a penalty, and they go for shot at goal.
Instead of
that's to get the losing bonus point. But yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. But yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. But the thing is that if they'd taken the three, they would have got the losing bonus point given themselves a chance to win the game.
Yeah.
And they missed a kick.
Yeah. Critical drivers not making good decisions. So yeah.
Yep.
Otago played Counties 40-22. Good win by Otago there. Josh Chimua, fantastic try and man of the match performance from him. But I'll be honest, I was watching Canterbury versus Waikato. So which I think was probably where most of us were watching it, that because both games were at the same time.
I did have a look at the Otago Counties Monaco game. They were down by 21-3 at one stage, and they actually came back and they were leading 22-21. So they played really well to get back in the game. But when they did have the momentum, credit to Otago, there was a critical period. I think it was the third period where Otago defended their backsides off, got an opportunity, and that pretty much broke. Counties Monaco altogether. They were just making too many little unforced errors as well. Although I liked what Kieran Reid brought to the table, he just seems to bring a little bit of stability to that.
Did he play today?
He did play today, and returning player Josh Dixon was very good. So good performance all round. But my moment in the match that I did see there was Liam Cotman running down the winger for Counties Monaco, the boy that played for the Brumbies, really got on the outside of everybody, and Cotman actually ran him down. And I think that just emphasized how much Otago wanted to win.
Yeah, you're talking about Kieran Drani there.
He shouldn't be there. He looks, in all the games that I've seen, he looks slow, unenthusiastic, and just not involved.
And has a Highlanders contract somehow.
Goodbye, that one.
So the game I did watch was Canterbury versus Waikato. You definitely got your money's worth in this one. 89 minutes worth of play. And that doesn't include actually the extra time we had probably before that at halftime either. But yeah, well, this one went all the way. The third 1-point loss by Canterbury this season. Mm. Wow.
And controversy as well. In regular time, 3 minutes to go, Liam Missam scores, we think. It goes to the TMO. And it took them about 3 minutes to look at it. And they kept slowing it right down. But, you know, to me, if they'd shown that in fast time, I think you would have found that was a try. You'd almost thought Waikato were...
Whoa, hang on. Let's back the truck up here. Give us some more information about what were they looking at.
They were basically looking to see if he dropped the ball. But they...
Oh! Hang on. What's the difference from last week then, Steve? What's the difference from last week?
He had two hands on the ball.
Yeah, but doesn't matter. It's just like just downward pressure, not losing...
There was clear separation in the
Yoani. No, there wasn't. No, there wasn't clear separation. Hey, push your chip over, mate. Don't worry about it.
Can you believe this?
That's golden. He has to come back. He has to be a regular on the show now.
Yeah.
He's our little ninja. But hey, in the end, it didn't matter because they scored on 89 minutes. Rehana also put over what wasn't an easy conversion to seal the win
And deservedly, Paul. They stayed in the fight. They were down 15-6 at one stage, and you just thought, well, one more score would break them, but they just hung in there, and they're a young side. And just, I think, having that elder statesman, Liam Messam, in the last sort of, oh, I was going to say 20 minutes, 28 minutes, I think was a real key.
Actually, speaking of Novmum, worry about the heart rate up at around 500, I just wasn't worried about what's happened on Nocturnal because he hasn't showed up tonight. And it's like third loss for Canterbury this year. Mind you, it's the first to a premiership team because the other two losses have been to championship teams.
But only by 1 point. I mean, they could 6 points in the other direction, and suddenly they've got they've gone undefeated. Crazy close for Canterbury this year. So that means that we have Auckland at the top of the table on 24, closely followed by Waikato on 23. Small gap back to Tasman on 20, Wellington on 19, and Canterbury on 18. Harbour and Bay of Plenty both on 12 at the foot of the table in the Premiership. That really has become a tight battle now that Harbour have kicked into gear. Down the Championship.
I think, I'm going to have to butt in because we didn't really say this. I reckon Harbour's going to be absolutely annoyed. I'll say that way about dropping the game to Wellington. They would have gone down there confident of picking up the W. Which is not good news for Auckland, who they play next.
Yeah. Oh, Battle of the Bridge. Fantastic.
Yeah. That piece of steel that fell off the bridge years ago.
Oh, not from the crash recently.
From the crash recently.
Over in the Championship, or down in the Championship, Hawke's Bay and Otago, top of the table on 20 points. Hawke's Bay first, Otago second, closely followed by Northland on 18. Taranaki with that win over Southland, a jump above them, 14 points, Southland on 11, and then Counties on 5 and Manawatu 2 on 4. Those two clear at the bottom. You can say that those two aren't going to trouble the playoff pictures, but I think it's going to be tight between Southland and Taranaki, I think, for that fourth place in that one. And we're just waiting for Stephen to have a quick ninja action. thank you very much, boys, for joining me this week. We'll be back next week on Sunday at 8 p.m. We'll try and keep it to under an hour, not an hour and 20 minutes, as we will have review all of the Minor 10 Cup and Farrah Palmer Cup action.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.